Have you ever wondered why you can adjust your driver but not your irons? The new SMS irons from Adele provide the ability to adjust your irons to match your swing, which presents the opportunity for significantly improved control of the club head. What does that really mean? More distance and better control off better strikes. Go visit www.adelegolf.com to learn more about what your current irons can't do.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, my golfing friends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me once again is my good friend, Mr. James Miles. Hello, buddy.
Hello, world. Yeah. How's everybody?
Okay, Eldrick, relax. Oh man, speaking of him, I already missed that walk. Did you catch the Open?
I did. It's my favorite. I didn't get to watch it near as much as I usually do. My kids wore me out too much to actually wake up for the 2 a.m. viewing of the first tee shots and everything else live that I traditionally have done for like the last 12 years. I slept right through that alarm, but other than that, I watched probably half as much as I usually do, but it's my favorite major, so.
Interesting. You flat out said it, Mr. Gary Player. I mean, James Miles. yeah, so I watched not enough of the Open. I really am. I'm fond of the experience because it is everything that is terrifying about when my course gets firm and unfair, as I like to call it. I think it's usually a solid representation of what somewhat of the identity of the US Open is, which is land it anywhere and hope for the absolute 100% worst. you know, but then you have these unbelievable bunkers there at St. Andrews. You have the atmosphere that is presented by that unbelievable course. It's such an interesting show. And every time they go back there, I'm more fascinated by it because you get to learn some of the nuances. You get to see some of the changes that have gone on. And I don't know, man, I'm becoming more fond of it every year, despite the fact that I would be so angry playing that course condition. Wouldn't you? Wouldn't it drive you nuts?
No, man, I'm used to wind. Like all the wind. The only thing I'm not used to is the rain. But for me, like the old course is the pinnacle. And it's not because it's a hard course. When there's no weather like we saw on Sunday, it's not a hard course. That's why I love that the equipment guys, they're like, Jack is gnashing his teeth about the fact that the ball goes too far and all these other things. No, there was no wind. Like when we saw a little bit of weather, you saw what it did. It just so happens to be probably the most prestigious course in golf, right? That's the most storied course in golf. And two dudes with mullets have won the Open Championship there. I mean, we got Cam and we got John Daly. They both won it with mullets.
You really went there. There was an unbelievably touching moment pre-event, and Tiger was chilling on the putting green. And they did show some during the broadcast, they show what it's like to be Tiger before, and everyone coming up to him saying, hey, like getting their piece, you know. But I really appreciated when JD walked up to him and gave him a pat and a bit of a back rub, and you could tell they were really happy to see each other. And it's just, it's so hard to really truly understand what someone brings to the game. And we can say it all we want in paper, in news, whatever you want to say, that Tiger is golf or Tiger has had an unbelievable impact. But when you see these guys who have nothing to gain by doing it, making a point of going out of their way to talk to Tiger and just see how he's doing, I mean, that is so telling of what he brings. And, you know, he obviously got honored in a beautiful way this year and certainly didn't have the result he was looking for, but you know, what an incredible way to sort of send off St. Andrews in his way, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I don't know. Like the John Daly thing was really, really, really cool to me. And it's not because I like JD. I think he's got a lot of issues, but but I mean, the dude brings eyeballs. And you talk about two guys that brought eyeballs to golf. And people still pay attention to, like, it was hard watching Tiger play. I think from now on, it's probably going to be hard to watch Tiger play. But overall, it's just everything, all the pomp and circumstance that surrounds that one is pretty special. Even though there was some drama with the champions dinner and who was there and who was not there.
Who was not invited, right? Per se.
I mean, well, I mean, that's a whole interesting kerfluffle.
Yeah. I mean, you're like giving me opportunities to branch out, but there's so much to still say about St. Andrews. And I want to circle back a little bit on the conditions of play, because it wasn't just the wind that, if anything, they were saved from. The elements weren't too bad this year, but I don't think I've ever seen St. Andrews bounce the way it did this year. I mean, we've seen other open championships look in that sort of way where you hit it 200 yards in the air as the Tiger Stinger would, and then you finish at about 400, which is, you know, as obscene as it sounds. But I mean, St. Andrews truly had that sort of concrete profile that I was not anticipating. It was indicative of a number of tee shots where, I mean, they were hitting middle fairway, rolling out 120 yards and finishing in the fescue. It's like, wait a minute. And then you have these guys who they're basically playing iron off the tee to play to a number. They still, you know, roll it out to 300, but then they hit a wedge into this green from 90 yards and they're still putting from 150 feet. And no, I'm not misstating. Mm-mm. And it's, I don't know if that's insane to me or it's like awesome, or it's just this representation of what is so insane about course conditional setups. But it's like, that's so beyond what I play. You know, I land mine here in Ohio, I land it in the soft turf and it hits and puts a giant crater in the ground, and then I'm fixing the ball mark that's, you know, 2 feet away from my ball. Over there, it's like, how do you plan for that? And then you hit it 2 yards short of your target and you're 60 yards short of the hole. Like, how do you plan for that?
Or you end up in one of those bunkers that's just right? you then have to literally play out sideways or backwards.
Let me ask you a question, James. When you're watching this experience from home, and that I know you, and you, it's, I'm not saying you let golf get you, but I feel like having to hit backwards or sideways out of a bunker like that would probably be a fairly emotional ordeal for you.
I don't know, man. I think if I'm there, I'd be okay with it. I also think, and you kind of saw this last time, I still get mad about my golf game, but I think coaching has mellowed me a lot and all that. Like sometimes, because I mean, I can't tell kids to not try the stupid shot and then go out and try the stupid shot. So yeah. if I'm preaching that sometimes you just got to take your medicine, you got to do what you got to do, then I have to do it too. But yeah, the idea of you just hit your tee shot into a bunker, you're 60 yards from the green in this bunker, but you now have to play backwards 30 yards to have your next shot is pretty wild. So
there was some of those, like on 17, that bunker short of the green, which everyone openly admitted was basically like being in a hazard. Mm-hmm. You know, when you hit in there, there was never a good condition to come out of it, especially from the distances they're playing. But I mean, you had guys who were 30 feet from the hole who are now chipping sideways and now have 30 yards or whatever the number is. You had, I think it was Homa hit. He basically whiffed his ball to move it down into the bunker on, I think, day one or two. I was watching that group. And then, you know, drops an absolute dime, which is super cool to see. But like, that is for those guys who can do whatever they want. If you give them a lie to put them in a position where they're not allowed to flex their ability, I mean, that has to be such a debilitating experience to say, like, you need to whiff the ball 5 feet and then showcase your talent. How do you recover?
The bunker on 17, what my guy Victor did on Saturday, like he holds out from that crazy bunker in that crazy situation. It's my favorite moment of the whole tournament, because they shove the microphone in his face at the end of it. They're like, oh, that bunker shot, that was a great shot. And Victor like straight up just looks at him. He's like, yeah, I was aimed 25 yards right. Like in it, like just and is totally serious of it. Like he's just, I was aimed way over there, and it ta-da. So wow. that's part of why I love that style of golf. It's part of why for most of the Rota, I really like, there's a few courses in there that I don't think they represent that kind of golf very well, but to me, that's what that major is. And yeah, scores were low this year. Like what happened for this championship is cool to me. But if the wind would have blown, like we've seen this championship finish it, you know, one under wins the whole thing. So it's a course that still stands up, albeit, I mean, as players get stronger, I think that has a bigger deal with it than it does the equipment. You're right. Watching some of these shots land in the fairway and they're like, oh, he's found the middle of the fairway. And then all of a sudden it just keeps rolling up on the hill into the gorse. Yeah. You're like, well, congratulations. You were in the fairway for 80 yards. Yeah.
You did it great, except you hit it too far.
But then
with your five iron off the tee. So,
I mean, I loved it though. Like what I got to see was great. It's my favorite. I wish I'd got to see more. I'm excited Cam won. I think
so Cam's a big story, right? Like that was crazy. Cause in my perspective, and you know me, James, you know me well enough to say, hey, give me Rory or JT. I don't know why. Those are my guys. I want them to win all the time. But there are these guys who are kind of sneaking up through the sidelines and showcasing just how unbelievable their skill is. I mean, Cam Smith, a great example. Scottie Scheffler is another really great example where these guys are just, they're flat out saying it's mine on Sunday. And I mean, to shoot a 30 on the back nine of a major in the final round, like, are you kidding me? That's unbelievably skilled golf. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the conditions they're in. Obviously the wind didn't play a role, but you still have to make ridiculous putts. You still have to make incredible shots.
Well, and
he was the only one to do it. And so thank goodness he goes on and wins, because that was insane.
But you're a Rory guy. Rory, for the first time in how long, did exactly what he needed to on a Sunday in a major.
Yeah.
Like he literally, and they said he talked to Tiger and Tiger told him what he thought the score was, what you need to do. And like I watched most of the day Sunday. At least with those groups, those last two groups. And like Rory didn't miss. Like, yeah, he two-putted everything. I think he had 36 putts. But he hit every green, which, yes, they're gigantic. He didn't do these crazy Rory things that we see sometimes where he's either going to hit the greatest five wood of his life or he just hits it into a hazard that he has no business aiming at. Like he literally, I'm worried about this one more than I am everything else that went for him, because he literally did everything right. And Cam just played one of the best rounds of golf we've seen in decades.
Yeah.
Like that dude straight up just went out and won it. And not only did he win it, the other Cameron beat Rory too. Like that's the part that's kind of getting lost in this with that eagle in 18. Like he finished second, and Rory played. Yeah, he didn't make birdies, but he played a pretty flawless final round of a major championship in the lead to start the day. I don't know, man. It's just it was cool. It was cool the way it ended up. I know a lot of people like to look at the scores. I think those are the people who don't typically watch the golf.
It's so easy to overlook what it takes to get there and say, you know, I want a certain number. But I mean, if these guys are hitting it 2 feet, not 2 yards, 2 feet in a different direction, that ball results in a totally different location. Mm-hmm. And especially in a place like St. Andrews, I think Augusta is another nice example of that. Chambers Bay was a prime example of that. Like one up in the East Coast, the U.S. Open a couple years ago, what everyone thought was super unfair. Lefty hit his putt halfway through. I can never remember what that course is. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it's going to drive me nuts. Anyways, it's not coming to me. I had no shot. But the point is, like, you have to understand the challenges these guys face. And if someone shows up and puts up a score like that, you have to respect what has been accomplished. And if you don't, you're just overlooking something that should be seen. And I think Cam Smith did everything to present what pure skill does to golf right now. And it's an interesting segue into a couple things. Number one, I do finally want to talk a little bit about Liv on the pod, but there's still one thing I want to get there. Like my point that I'm going to make here is, this is the kind of skill that we've been invited to enjoy over the last so many years, and it's only gotten better. It's gotten more compact. You don't have this pure and utter dominance feel from one or two players. You have 20 any given week who can step up and just dominate the field, which is wild. But you know, I want to keep seeing that, and I'm not going to live yet, because we still need to speak about something. And this was the comments from Mr. Gary Player post. Damn it, there's so many parallels to live. Mm-hmm. I want to get mad at Gary for a minute, because that man,
I love getting mad at Gary, so I'm here for it.
He does not stop saying things that just really irritate me and don't help golf. Taking an issue with the distance there and overlooking the fact that these guys are rolling the ball 150 yards on landing, you can set up St. Andrews to not play like that, I'm sure. There's no reason in my mind why you couldn't. And I've been saying this for well over 100 episodes on the show. All you need to do is soften up the ground and the distance gets solved. So taking issue, saying that it's becoming irrelevant based on the fact, no one should be upset when the ball rolls that much about distance. Is that fair?
No, it's perfectly fair. Here's my thing about people like this, and it's kind of my issue with Jack too. A lot of it feels like they're pushing an agenda. And unfortunately, like the two that we hear these tens things from, with it being Gary and Jack, they are icons of the game. All this, like, I fully respect that. But because you were so good, when you come back and say these things, you think you're defending the game. But instead, to me, you seem like you're so worried about your legacy, because guys are more athletic now. And I know Gary can do 200 sit-ups and 5,000 push-ups and all these other things. But you're so worried about your legacy that you're not looking at the whole picture like you should. Because if they were playing that course in those conditions in that situation, they would have taken advantage of that role, and had, like, the scores were still going to be good with those guys and the old equipment in those conditions. Because you're right, like you mentioned earlier, I don't know that I've ever seen that course that firm.
And to your point, obviously equipment's changed. The freedom for players to hit it out in the toe and get no spin now is certainly higher. But we met that change 2 decades ago, between transitioning into the metal body head and changing out of the wound ball to a material. And that's obviously had the most significant impact. But the biggest change since then, since the turn of the century, is not necessarily in that. Maybe it's the way it's structured, for sure. Tour pros moving to a 460 cc head instead of 430. Yeah, I mean, obviously those are going to play a role. But could you ask Gary Player back in his heyday to change his swing mechanics to impart 500 RPMs of spin different? I would argue their perspective wasn't like that back then. They could certainly try and do things that would have similar impact, but we are so technologically different now. These guys are so smart when it comes to fitting into the windows, that guys like Tiger, who used to say, "I play into a 9-window experience," no one else thought like that 40 years ago, did they? And if they did, was it shared along the tour? If it wasn't, then it was very few people that were looking at it like that.
Well, I think, and we're going to go, I mean, this is what we do. Whenever I'm on here, we go on these tangents, right?
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that needs to be thought of, like, that when we go era to era, like, I think what is vastly under-talked about when it comes to golf courses and distances and equipment and everything else is the launch monitor. In my heart of hearts, I believe the fact that these guys can go out and they can dial in these things. And like you said, they can work to hit that shot that knocks off 500 RPM. They have that in their arsenal and in their bag now, whereas previously, yes, you would record swings, right? You're not tracking any information other than your scatter pattern of where your shots are landed and your dispersion and everything. I think the launch monitor doesn't get the credit that it maybe deserves, good and bad, for what's happened with it all. Like, I'm not disagreeing that these guys are overpowering things and that things have happened, but I'm of the side that they're so much more athletic. Like, I love professional sports where athletes get to be athletes.
Yeah.
And golf is finally there.
I feel like guys like Player and Nicholas and again, I find it really annoying that we have to throw these like disclaimers in there. Like, look, I'm not discounting what they accomplish as players.
Absolutely not.
I think it'd be incredibly foolish considering Jack, for one, has 18 majors to his name. Like, that appears to be a number that will never be toppled, and full credit to his dominance. And thank goodness he was as long as he was back in his day, because clearly it helped him.
Yep.
But, you know, the idea that we're playing a different game right now and the perspective of young athletes moving into the game is so different from back then. I mean, there were legitimate opinions 20, 30, 40 years ago that said if you worked out, it was actually detrimental to your golf game. Whereas now, like, if you give Rory 4 days off and he doesn't work out all 4 days, he's probably going to freak out, you know, because that's just his regimen. It's the understanding that this connection between my body, my physical ability, my kinetic profile to golf is critical to my performance.
Yep.
No way we thought that way 30 years ago.
No, and that's why it's interesting from Gary, because you could argue that Gary was one of the first ones that thought, as far as the physiological and you know, those properties of the body and everything, that strength and everything went. So
do you think he takes that personally, James, that he never drew he never put two and two together enough to gain that advantage? It took a guy like Tiger to showcase that athleticism actually played a significant role in the benefits of golf.
I mean, that's an angle that I haven't ever really thought with Gary. Like, I always come back to, for him, a lot of it to me feels like sour grapes that he played in the era of Jack.
Yeah. So, you know, in the shadows of,
because,
sure, yeah,
because everybody always talks about Jack and Arnie and Gary. And yes, then you get into Watson and all these others that come into it, but those are the three that we always talk about a lot, right? And yeah, I mean, Arnie's peak was earlier in everything that went with it, but you see these guys, all three, who for the time were physically specimens. I mean, they were. Everybody talks about Jack and how strong Jack was. Everybody talked about Arnie and how strong Arnie was just naturally, right? It was that kind of build, whereas Gary came along and Gary worked at it. So maybe that's always been something in my head, but I like kind of what you're going with there. Like, maybe there is this little seed of jealousy of these guys and all the specialties and the things that go on with it. I don't know. It's just weird to me, because I want to love these guys and I want to support these guys and everything the legacy stood for, because I'm one that has long believed that they are, you know, everything in golf.
Yeah.
Without those three, we don't ever get to Tiger.
You have Jack, who is like the quintessential example of just pure dominance between his major play, etc. And then you have Arnie, whose legacy was very much built on redefining what it meant to have the heart and mind of golf. You know, you have this emotional connection to a player, and he's very welcoming, or was very welcoming, to that experience. Those are very much their legacies. And then you have a guy like Player, who's talking about physical fitness, but not in a connection to actually playing golf. Maybe he's just looking for that finalized identity as who was Gary Player.
You know, I think maybe
there was a time when I thought like his identity was the first like international golfer that had unbelievable success. But then you hear these stories, like, I remember when they played Payne's Valley, and it irritated me enough that I should have enjoyed the play. And I did, certainly. But the biggest impact there was listening to him talking about how he's a tree hugger. And while he's flying around in his private jet and celebrating the fact that he's never flown, no one's flown as much as he has around the world, blah, 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 burning all that fossil fuel. It's like, you're talking. See, now I'm getting really ranty. I've never really done this with a certain person. That's bad, dude. Holy cow. But I'm trying to bite my tongue, but at the same time, it's like you're getting two ridiculously different perspectives in the same conversation.
And so I know.
Go ahead.
No, as I say, I know, and I know we've gone a different way than what we thought we were going to with this, but I kind of really like it because I think that that right there for me, a lot of people with Jack and Jack's roll back the ball and everything else get irritated about it. But with Jack, it's such, it seems more tame and more thought out. Yeah, it's a little get off my lawny, but like Jack is just presenting it. Whereas with Gary, there's always been these things. So Gary comes off as the crazy uncle at times. And I hate that because when you go back and you look at the successes that he had as a player, like it's insane what he accomplished in the era of Jack and Arnie and all these other ones. It's absolutely insane because he is the first or one of the first big, like, modern international players. I'll say that because we're not going back to the eras of the beginning of golf, right? When everything was international, but Gary put that perspective back on it. I don't know, man.
And to his credit, he took a lot of grief from a lot of people about his identity. I'm certainly not ignoring that. I haven't read enough about it, so it's kind of like I'm ignorant about it, but that's not what I'm speaking of. So I'm not discounting his experiences, the challenges he had faced as a young player. I'm more focused on what the here and now, and I've always been like that. You know, I'm not really a historian of the game. I love the history of the game. I'm very glad that it exists, but I'm very much in the here and now. And the problem with guys like Player and like Nicholas, I'm more or less assessing them on their current perspectives. And the problem with that is there's always that secondary component. Like, I'll give you an example. I took a lot of, I don't want to say shots. I took a lot of issue with Jack last year talking about, you know, how the ball needs to get rolled back. And he did it after all the goofy stuff he did at Muirfield between week one, making it all soft, and week two, burning the hell out of it and letting the guys roll the ball down the fairway. Like, there's two different conversations here. I think he was upset at a hole for having wind at the back players' backs one day. Like, it was this upsettiness out of balls. And I realized, like, is he speaking as a player of the game or is he speaking as a designer of the game? Because it benefits him to have the balls roll back. They can shrink that area as much as they want. So it's like, is he being genuine? And then I'll circle on that to say that now we're talking about Gary and the Open, and suddenly we get this article that comes out on Monday that says Gary Player ranks the Open first and the Masters fourth in his major rankings. And it's kind of like, okay, Mr. Player, like, yeah, I wonder why. Like, no one has ever said the PGA Championship is the greatest major of all time.
Yeah, I was about to go there.
You know, I've heard more arguments on why is the Players not the fourth major than I have of anyone suggesting that there is a legitimate, anything less than a massive gap between the top three majors and the PGA Championship. We have spent plenty of time talking about the Adele Golf SMS wedges and how their swing match system benefits the game, both in the full swing and the touch shots. Fortunately for us, Adele has decided to expand that concept into their new SMS irons, which present three interchangeable weights on the back of the iron face that you can move around at your leisure to best suit your golf game. Adele's testing makes note that a face which is 2 degrees open or closed has the ability to take the ball 10 yards off the intended line. With SMS, you can either tinker away or find that right location to set it and forget it, depending on the type of player you are, just like your driver. Visit www.adelegolf.com to see why they are leading the SMS story with one thought, that your irons can't do this.
It has to sound like sour grapes, and it has to feel like sour grapes.
Well, it does.
Because you read of the article. Because I don't.
But you read the article, and then they say, well, not everyone like Augusta can be buying all this extra land and building out length and blah, blah, blah. It was very anti-Augusta, which is like, are you really sharing your opinion right now?
Well,
or
it
are
makes you
just sour grapes?
It makes you wonder when all that went down, what else happened with it all for that perspective to change? Yeah. And if before that, if he would have ranked it that way, because I mean, we've heard a lot of tour pros that have won majors talk about their favorite majors. And I don't remember ever hearing the Masters rank fourth.
I would imagine you'd be easier to find someone who says, I thought the Players was the fourth major, than somebody says, I think the Masters is the fourth major.
That's wild, and man.
It's such a struggle. And here's the problem. I get challenged fairly because it sounds like I'm not giving enough credit or respect to our forefathers of the game. And that's, they've laid the path for the game. There's no question around it. But my fear is once you're done playing, you're either going to contribute to the game or you're going to be a detriment. And I feel like the more that's said, the more you go in this wrong, non-ideal direction. I want growth. I want improvement. I want positive feedback. If you're focused on the negative and you're clearly going to a secondary agenda, I really struggle with that. I really do. And I don't care how many majors you've won.
I don't know. We went down a different direction than I anticipated here.
Yeah. I've been kind of excited that I have like an off episode where I get one of the boys back on instead of someone from the industry. So I can just ream on these opinions that have just been eating at me for the last little bit. And fortunately it's you, cause you can ream me in a little bit, but
well, you know,
yeah,
it's a good conversation and it's a good point with it all, because these things all intertwine to these topics that we keep coming up and we keep sticking microphones in the faces of these guys because they are the history of the game. But man, at some point you just have to kind of stop. I don't know. But you know me, I struggle with that whole old mentality versus new mentality of things. I have always struggled with that in it. And that's not a lack of respect for those that came before, because I'm as much a historian of the game as anybody. But I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
I think there's lots of work
to do with respect for the tour as well, which, I mean, it's a perfect segue, man, because we are in such a friggin' weird place with what the PGA Tour identity is and will be a year from now. I mean, LIV mm-hmm. has 100% disrupted that, whether they're doing it in the right way or the wrong way. I mean, listen, I'm not doing politics in the show. I'm not doing any of that nonsense. If you folks want that, go on social media. It's a hotbed of that madness. But I will say, purely from the perspective of LIV as a golf tour, you have them truly and genuinely buying talent and doing it recklessly. I don't think there's a better word to put there. They're obviously showing that they've got some power. And you know what the pathetic thing to me, James, is? It's not so much the tour has had a really hard time reacting to it, because I mean, they've had years to plan for something like this. What bothers me is the media just can't get enough of it. Like I heard, and this is an early tangent on this conversation, but I heard one of the early questions to Cam Smith after he won the freaking Open Championship.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Had to do with his potential defection to LIV. Like, my guy, I'm holding the claret jug here. Like, can you have a little bit of respect for this major championship win and focus on the fact that I just did this? Like, how is one of the first comments about a competing tour?
To me, it fits with everything that kind of goes on in sports. And I'm not talking politics. I'm talking in sports, because it's kind of everywhere. And I say this as a writer. You know, for a career pathway of all this stuff, like, there are not very many people now that want to or are willing to go out and dig out a story and investigate a story and come up with a story and come up with something original, because everything is so right now, immediate, knee jerk, get the news out there that's hot and hit it and hit it and hit it again, that you ask those questions and somebody has to do it. Whether it's a lack of tact or a lack of whatever, the fact that question of all, and I'll be honest, well, I would say the second most, I would never expect that question to be asked at the Masters, you know,
the fourth best major. Yeah.
The fourth best major. I don't think that they would allow they would allow somebody to ask that question. And if it was asked, I think they would shut it down right there. The second one that I would expect that not to happen is the Open Championship.
Yeah.
And the fact that it did is just
at St. Andrews, nonetheless.
At the ancestral home of golf. So we're talking. My issue with the LIV Tour is nothing about where the money comes from. I don't care. It's not about them going out and just throwing this money at it. I mean, the rumors now that they're offering Hideki $400 million. Like it's not. Yeah.
How do you not take that?
You have to take that. And I don't care what anybody says. You have to take that. It's not those things, because I think if you went through all these guys that have, I'm staying here, they've probably been offered because they are reckless. I think reckless is a good word for it. But to me, the issue with the whole LIV Tour thing is, and it's just as reckless, is the leadership of the PGA Tour and the way that they've handled this. When you become reactionary to things, like you think about this, you're being outsmarted at times by Greg Norman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was the RBC that Rory won? The first thing he said is it's one more win than that other guy or some other guy or something like that. Like you can tell it's the secondary thought of their mind after everything they do. It's kind of sad.
Go back to the letters when they first all dropped, right? You and I talked about this. Like the PGA Tour issues there, we're going to do this and we're going to stand firm and we're going to suspend players. And the LIV Tour letter comes out like 2 minutes after.
Yeah,
because they knew what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. If you're the PGA Tour, you cannot be that telegraphed and that reactionary.
Yeah. But I mean, they've kind of been put into a position where they've had it their way for so long. There's not really that many other options, because it really is. If there are tours that come out and say, we're going to pay you regardless, and then if you win, we're going to pay you more. I mean, that's immediately a better condition than what the tour provides. And more specifically, anyone who's trying, like, here's my thought. If LIV ever goes lower and starts to dig into feeder leagues and being like, mm-hmm. look, hey, we will fund this whole process for you. We'll pay each of you, I don't know, whatever the low level of number is, just to be a part of the tournament. And then you get your additional value for winning. Like, obviously they don't seem to be too worried about that money. So if they ever start digging into those feeder leagues, I mean, the PGA is going to be in some big trouble. LIV has real staying power, like that's where it's going to really change. Cause there's no legitimate support from the tour other than an availability of a tournament that can put you into a place to succeed later in your life. There's no legitimate value there for young aspiring players. So if LIV does that right, I mean, my goodness, man, that's a 5-year swing that could be ugly.
But let's throw that one step further, because I don't know how much you in the last few days have kind of seen on it. The word coming out that potentially the LIV Tour is going to go after the LPGA.
Yeah, I saw that a little bit. I'm not sure what I think about that.
Well, to me, with that much money that's sitting in there, however many billions of dollars, like it's a win for the ladies. You and I both stand firm on that. What the ladies' purses are versus the guys is it's insane. But it's that way in a lot of things in life. I'm not getting political on it. My point is,
no point.
If they really can, with what the concept is, if they can come up with something and the LPGA works with them, if they can come up with something where in the morning you get up in the morning and you start watching golf, streaming it on YouTube or whatever else it is, you start watching golf at 8 a.m. and you watch the ladies play 5-hour round or 6-hour round or whatever else it is, however they're going to speed it up, the shotgun start, and then immediately after that, the guys tee off. That's pretty freaking cool, dude.
Yeah. Well, accessibility is the big story, right?
Yep.
So there's two things that need to improve on tour golf for me, and I'll watch any tour that applies to this.
I'm the same way. We're
accessibility. Yeah. Well, accessibility to my ability to watch. ESPN Plus has been unbelievable for me because I have the ability to watch every week the PGA Tour. If they can present LPGA or whatever you want to call on knockoff league for women's. If they can present, I mean, hell, dude, if they presented some of these feeder tour availability, like if they actually showed the play, I would watch it. Sure, why not? I've got nothing but things to gain by having that. Even if it's just background. I mean, I work out of my house, man. Like, why would I not have golf on?
So, not to change the subject, but a thought that just crossed my mind with it all, because, you know, I coached football forever and did all the other things with it. So, like, the hopeless addict of sports, you see all these other sports and what's become. Like, I mean, I'm 10 minutes from Stillwater, Oklahoma, where a high school kid was just drafted number one in the Major League Baseball draft, signed an $8 million contract today, $8 million signing bonus. 18-year-old kid's going to go play for the Baltimore Orioles. Like, that's the thing with the LIV. And now that they have their number set at 48 and they're talking about a relegation system and everything else, I'm not going to get into that. But if they were to, like, this money to some of these young guys, the young guys are going to take it, because you can preach tradition all you want. I don't think this generation is as tradition heavy as a lot of people like to think they are. That's not a knock on the generation. To me, they're smarter, because the generation is doing what Arnie did, and they're going to take care of theirs first.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I do, man. And that's what I kind of circle back on this whole conversation about the feeder tours is, if you don't put the money there to support them and someone else does, why would they not all defect? Like, there's, to me, it seems pretty sensible. What is the PGA tour going to say? You can't join our tour if you go somewhere else and actually get paid to play golf. Whereas you come to our tour and you pay us for you to play golf. And by the way, good luck trying to get your expenses to be less than your profits every week. Like, to me, that's just basic common sense. And if the best 50 amateurs go and do that, PGA Tour can no longer say, we don't want you. The PGA Tour would have to pivot and start saying, we need you. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we won't have a Cam Smith in 5 years. We won't have a Scottie Scheffler in 5 years. That just won't exist. It will be in a different tour, making a crap ton of money, you know, actually enjoying the experience. Now, whether 54 holes is a real tournament or not, whether the loud music is a real tournament or not, I feel like none of that even needs to be a part of this conversation.
I agree.
The core component here is, has the PGA Tour adequately supported their membership from point A to point, I guess, Z, or in this case, C, which would be champion? Like, that, you can't just feed the top. It has to be all encompassing. And if you have competition, things will change dramatically. So what I'm curious about, James, is, do you think there's real staying power with LIV, or is this a flash in the pan?
I think they will for sure survive probably like 3 or 4 years. And by then you're going to know where things.
That's exciting, man. How do you think the PGA Tour is going to look in 4 years?
I don't know. And that's like,
it can't be reactionary.
No. You have to get over that.
Yeah.
And you have to stop doing the woe is me and everything else. And you have to go about and take care of your business. And you have to showcase your talent and put your talent out there and market your talent and let them thrive in it. And that's like you mentioning like the feeder leagues, and if the LIV Tour would get involved with it, what if the PGA Tour would just do a better job of taking care of the feeder leagues?
Yeah, man. Just, you know, put them up in a hotel and feed them every week.
And that's, like, what, that's not,
what a start, man.
And there was a conversation in our forum the other day about one of the players, and they made, you know, they only made 160,000. And the first comment was like, oh, only 160,000. But then somebody came in behind and went through, like, okay, this dude happened to make the cut this week and made $160,000 after he gives his 10% to his caddy, after he pays off his swing coach, after he pays his physical coach, after he goes through the mental coach and all these other things, and then transportation and whatever else goes with it. Whereas only like 50 or 60 places above him, that dude made like $1 million. You know, yeah. For a year, as far as the comparisons year by year that go with it. And no, I'm not a believer that everybody should get the same amount. That's not what I'm saying. But you can't tell me in today's age, the PGA Tour can't take care of caddies.
No, that's the last thing you would convince me, is that everyone should get paid the same. But everyone should get paid something.
Yeah, you can't.
Appearance fees aren't free. I mean, I've been trying to charge you every time you show up for a tea time with me, and it's not worked out really well. Maybe I can get on with the LIV. Maybe they'll do like an appearance fee. I don't know why they would, but they're paying everyone, so I may as well try at this point.
Hey, give me the money, you know?
Yeah, what a wild ride, man. I don't know. I think the LIV is going to make things really interesting for a while. I think the media is making a mess of it all, which of course naturally they would do. And not to get political there, but you know, that's the media. So not picking a side. But yeah, I mean, that's quite the tangent after Mr. Gary Player's presentation here. I don't know, man. Are you excited at all about the rest of the PGA season?
You know, I'm trying to get amped up for the playoffs. I really am. And just because of some of the names and like some of the players that are in form, like I could see Rory just go on a tear. And honestly,
like that time of year. So,
but honestly, the tour needs him to go on a tear.
Yeah.
Like they need one of these guys. This is the worst possible time for them to have somebody unknown just go on this big movement, because they are in a battle, like it or not. And I'm curious to see how the LIV stuff goes from here on in, and when we can watch. And I mean, I've got YouTube TV and stuff and YouTube streaming and all the premium stuff. So I'll probably check out both, but I don't know. The rest of the season's always weird to me because it's that letdown after the Open Championship.
Yeah. True. Yeah. I mean, you had that one exciting tournament right after all the crazy stuff happened, and it was JT, Finau, and Rory all in the final group. I mean, what a way to finish. But yeah, I don't know, man. I still think the tour grabs me in a way that it should. And you know, I hope the best for the whole experience for every golfer moving forward and trying to become a part of the big experience. I mean, that to me, I mean, you solve that, you solve just about everything. You create that passion in the game, and that's what I want. I mean, I'm not here to watch 54 holes of loud music and nonsense. So have you watched much LIV yet?
I've watched a couple. One of the times I was traveling to come see you. So yeah. Throughout the entire my entire travel period, I watched like 4 hours of it.
Okay.
You know, and to me, the coverage is, I like to see golf shots.
Yeah.
And they that's the shotgun start thing is weird and everything else, but even though it's really not weird, but like they show golf, and no, they don't have commercials and all these other things right now, but they show golf. Even the Open Championship, dude, look, like for what you watch, look how many commercials we got, and they do the playing through. And have you noticed on the playing through every year, the screen we get to watch golf gets a little smaller?
I noticed 6 hour rounds and how disgusting that is. You imagine going back to the primary, the original location of golf and playing a 6 hour round. I would be afraid golfers would be reaching out of the ground, their ghosts, and grabbing me in the foot and like pushing me while I'm trying to hit a drive playing at 6 hours. Like there's nothing healthy about playing 6 hours. I get cranky when I play in 4:10 now.
Same.
I played in 4:30 this weekend, and I honestly thought something was wrong. Play 6 hour rounds. I mean, that we talk about how you fix the LPGA tour. I mean, that's A1 right there, if not
A2. That's a whole other episode right there in itself.
Pay those ladies money and then tell them to hurry the hell up and play golf.
next time I'm on, we'll just do pace of play the whole time.
Holy cow. We do need to talk pace of play. It's not going to be today. we haven't hit on pretty much anything I wrote on, but it's been a really fun chat. We got to get you back on because I've got a new utility iron in the bag. So I have a driver. I have three utilities, potentially down to two, and then a whole crap ton of irons. I'm so excited about this new setup, James. I'm going to be hitting what old Bubba likes to call piss missiles down the fairway.
Is it a utility when it's the loft of a three wood?
It's going to be the loft of an aggressive three wood when I'm done with it. So yeah, I think so. And they're all going to have head covers on it. I can't wait. Oh that's Lord. Great. Yep. Are you, you getting back into golf? Are you playing a bunch?
It's been better. I think last week I put in 12 rounds.
Atta boy.
So we're getting there. I'm starting to add back in rounds. I'm not going to hit my number I did last year, but I'll be pushing 200 maybe by the end of the year.
When are we meeting up in St. Louis?
It needs to happen soon. I need out of this place. I need out of Oklahoma forever.
Well, airport rides are free, just so you know, in Cincinnati. Anyways, brother, you have any questions for me today?
I don't have anything for you today. I don't. It was a lot of fun. It was a good conversation.
This is healthy, man. It's great. I hope you guys enjoyed it out there. I know we've had some pretty awesome weeks of industry folk telling their story and celebrating. We got a really cool one coming up next week. Old friend of mine, as I like to call him, someone that, I'll let the show tell its own story. But either way, it's been super fun, James. Thanks for taking the time. This is an evening. We're hitting nearly 12 o'clock my time, which is kind of my go zone. But anyways, thanks, man. I do appreciate you.
Absolutely. It was fun.
Hey, if you guys are out there playing golf this weekend, have a great time. Make it count. Do not play in six rounds or I will reach through this iPad, iPhone vehicle and smack you. But have fun. Enjoy it. And we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.